This is Afternoon Programming with L.
All right. Episode 21 in Afternoon Programming. I'm not gonna lie, I'm upset at myself because we was having a dope conversation. I forgot to fucking hit record, but it's all good. Episode 21, I got a dope guest today. It's the one, the only, my homie Stolen Drums.
What up, dog?
Do a second intro and shit. My bad, bro.
It's all good, man.
So we were talking a little bit before. I forgot that I was actually recording. So real quick, just to summarize, originally you're from Detroit, Michigan.
Yes, sir.
And you lived there for, you were an Army brat and you kind of were living there for, how long did you say?
I think I lived there about 8 years total.
8 years. Okay. Let me ask you, because I know this is one thing I wanted to ask you. So you're originally from Detroit. How did you make your way to Atlanta?
That's a long story. So, we moved around a lot. We didn't settle down in Detroit after all the military stuff. Mm-hmm. And my wife, so I went to the military too, and then I contracted. So we went all around the world again. Mm-hmm. For a while. But then when we came back, my wife had some relatives out here. We checked it out, and it should look like Martin Luther King's dream. So once we saw that, like, it was important for us to have the kids in school out here and all of that. So we brought them out here. Here we are.
Do you remember what year it was that y'all moved out here?
Originally, I want to say like 2003 or four.
Okay.
And then we left and went to Japan for 3 years and then came back around like 2009, 10, somewhere in there.
Okay. So now I'm starting to put things together. So what's the move that brought, what happened that brought you to move to Japan for a little bit?
Oh, I got a job out there. Yeah. Once I got that job offer, I was out of here. That's once in a lifetime shit.
Yeah.
Okay. So then you was out there working for 3 years, and then along the time, I know you've mentioned this earlier, but since we're summarizing everything, that's where you got the opportunity to do the music for the video game.
Absolutely. Yeah. I met those guys out there.
Wow. And then you said,
off of MySpace.
MySpace?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh my God. So did you message them via MySpace or they reached out to you?
Yeah, we had, I got friends, man. One of my friends was like my acting manager at the time. His name is Steve, and he's always been like a social media guru type of cat, even mm-hmm. way back in MySpace days. And he was like, yo, I got the plug, $50. I get you all of the MySpace views. So I gave my man $50 and shit, and kind of didn't think about it. And then I opened up my MySpace about 2 weeks later, and it was like, you are currently the number one rapper in Japan, which is, I don't know what the fuck buttons he pushed to do that, but he did. So then that was one of the things that I got from that shit. The video game company reached out and was like, hey, we saw you on there and we'd love to work. And I was like, okay, cool. So.
Damn. Okay. And so the video game, did you do the whole soundtrack or you just had a few tracks on there?
I did probably about either like 40 to 60% of the first soundtrack. Wow. And then probably about 40% of the second one.
Oh, wow. So you worked on two different games for them, or was it all in one?
Two games. Okay. Yeah, two games.
Damn. It's wild. That's coming from like a MySpace days. And I remember those days trying to be cool, have your top 10 or your top three or whatever it was. So then I know you told me before, of course, that prior to production that you were a rapper and you rapped for a few years, and then that came from Japan. But then coming back, you were saying that it was saturated here. It was just basically too much going on. It just wasn't taking off, right?
Yeah, I was like a rappity rap, camo hat, backpack rapper in Atlanta, Georgia in like 2008 or some shit like that. No, 2008, I think. And this shit wasn't working, that wasn't popular then. And then, the little connections that I could glean in that space doing what I did. I'm sorry, was it 2008? Oh, this is previous to that. This is like, I don't remember. The timeline is all jacked up. Maybe 2006 or something.
Okay.
But either way, like I said, nobody was into that. They weren't excited about that rapidy rap shit. They wanted whatever was popular then. Jeezy. They wanted Jeezy is what they really wanted. You know what I mean? And Tip and all of that shit, which is cool. But that wasn't what I was doing. So they were like, nah, you got to got to do that shit. And I was like, I can't even, I don't know how to do that shit. You know
exactly.
What I mean?
So, no, that makes sense. So then let me ask you, coming from Japan and you were like, you know, real popular in Japan, what's like, how was the hip hop scene over there compared to when you came back?
I mean, hip hop in Japan is just hip hop, right? So culturally, there's a different view of us. And when mm-hmm. I say us, I mean hip hop community.
Yeah.
I mean, black folks too, but like hip hop community. Mm-hmm. There's a different view of us overseas than there is here, right? Mm-hmm. All of the like, I mean, more so now that they're starting to catch up and shit is like everything's at the same time because of social media. But at this time, like hip hop culture was about hip hop culture. And that original kind of concept of like uplifting community and like strength and consciousness and knowledge itself was very prevalent. And like the rest of the world got that message and didn't get all of the anti-messaging that we got here and shit. So they were very much like about hip hop culture. Mm. So when they saw my rappity rap ass, they were like, oh yes, you're a true school. Like that type of shit.
Damn, that's so dope. So then that it's crazy that like those scenes exist like that. Cause I'm pretty sure it's the same thing. I remember, you know, my homie Kerosene, or you know, Kerosene.
Yeah.
Of course,
yeah.
The homie. He grew up in London, and so he was telling me, like, I was asking him, like, you know, what was it like compared to, of course, out here in the States? And he was talking about the same thing. It was, like, way different, and they just had a different way of appreciating the music, and just the music sounded different, but they loved what we were making in the States, and but they took it and ran with it in a whole nother way that we probably would have never thought of, you know? And so
I feel like we thought of the same way, but I think, like, and, you know, not to, obviously, his experience is his, but I feel like, in my experience running around the world, it's the same energy that we had when we started this shit, but the like the economic shit didn't happen, like the big the corruption of money didn't occur in the same way overseas that it did here with hip hop music. You feel what I'm saying? So it changed the way like the business side of things work.
It felt a little bit more pure out there. Like
the motivations are different. Oh, okay. Like, you know, cats here, as far as popular music is concerned, that's a business and it's a commerce based ideology. Like I need to get money. So these are the things I do to get money. There is a more like representative of culture ideology. So it's like, I don't want to disrespect this culture. So these are the things I need to do in order to like participate and not overstep. Maybe that's a good way to put it. You know what I mean?
Definitely. Okay. Damn. That's so dope. So then, whenever you made, cause before you were rapping, eventually you were telling me you picked up production and you self-taught yourself on like making the music that you wanted to make. Whenever that happened, did you see like, did you ever have any fans out there that were like, nah, man, we want you to keep rapping out there in Japan?
Nah, I didn't really have a ton of fans. Oh, okay. I mean, it was really me and my homies just running around doing young man shit. You feel me?
Gotcha.
And just young man shit happened to consist of rapping as well. And, gotcha. You know, we were just very visible. Mm. I think it was a bunch of 25 and under dudes with a respectable amount of money. We all had really good jobs and we kind of pooled that money together to do things. So we would do
okay.
We would do things and it would be out loud. So people heard about them. You know,
I got you. That's so dope. Okay. So then you come back from Japan. This is when you start to get into photography and videos, right? And because the oversaturation, if I remember them right. So you get into photography and videos and like a lot of creatives, you're running and gunning and really just, you were telling me before that you're interested in cameras. You just loved cameras. What, like, did that kind of, did you have anybody that kind of like sparked that curiosity from you, or you kind of were like, saw a camera and you were like, oh shit, let me figure this out.
Man. So there's another kind of opportunity. Like moving around is very important. I suggest folks to have the means to, or an opportunity to like get out of the country and go check out the world. Mm-hmm. But being in Japan in that time frame is right when the DSLRs with video started coming out.
Oh yeah.
So the first one was a D90, I believe, or D40. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I bought it and I bought it in Japan before it came out anywhere else.
Oh wow.
And I was able to shoot photography, you know, that's really what I bought it for. But the video looked like movies. And I was like, oh, shit, I didn't know you could do this, you know?
Yeah.
So I'm shooting movies with the shit. My homies are shooting them. They all got them. And they were shooting movies and stuff. So we're kind of like bugging out about how cool it looks. So we're making little projects and stuff. And now it's interesting because it's a new technology. It didn't exist before. And like, you know, we're making very early concepts of like what this art is going to be. And like, it was just fun. So I just kept playing with that shit. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And then I know you were telling me before, so then you were shooting here. Was it here in Atlanta? Yeah, it was here in Atlanta. You were shooting a lot of like parties, events, taking photos, and you were kind of like started to gain traction with people here and started to make connections with it.
Interesting. Like I started that whole journey because I came back from Japan. I first stopped in Maryland, Pennsylvania. That area is where my family, where my mom's, where she lives at now. And my mother or my mother-in-law, father-in-law, my in-laws, they all stay out there too. Mm. And we stopped there for about a year just to kind of give the kids some family time around cousins and shit.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of those dudes that are out there, I went to school for a little bit, and I ran around out there for a little bit. So I ended up shooting video and photo for them, and then fell into a job in Baltimore shooting at a nightclub.
Oh, wow.
And that turned into like meeting my manager and working with, you know, Carvin Ivan and Mario and all of them.
Yeah.
And that was a crazy whirlwind of a time out of this little ass nightclub, though. It wasn't a big spot, man. It was a very small, it was an Ethiopian ran spot. It was fucking kind of one of like the more fun times of my career, hanging out shooting in there. I had a good time. It was dope.
And then so eventually that leads up to now fast track to you getting to go on a world tour with Jeezy, and that's like a crazy life. And then that was wild and in itself. But then after that's done, you were telling me that kind of like, I guess that life just wasn't right for you anymore.
Yeah, it was like you get to the mountaintop and realize you're on the wrong mountain type of situation. And it was like obviously a dream job, but it just wasn't my dream job. You know what I mean? So once that shit was done, I was like, yo, I kind of, if that's it, if that's the thing, I need to find something else to get into because I'm not really in love with that shit. It's not for me, you know? So took a job for a couple years. And then after that, found my way into making music. And I think that's kind of like, this works. I like it.
Yeah. Okay. So then that's when I asked you. So then once you get done with that world tour and you kind of get into that job, did you just stop making music at all?
Yeah, I stepped away from all creative pursuits for about 2 years. I didn't do anything. I just went to work, worked out, read books, and that was about it.
You just live life.
Yeah, yeah. And it was there, but I didn't touch it. I didn't touch anything. I just fucking... I think I bought a camera and I would go do like street photography every once in a while, just go pop up somewhere. I learned how to skateboard and read probably 150 books and shit and fucking just, I dropped like 80 pounds. I just really went in, you know?
Exactly. Okay. So then those 2 to 3 years pass by. What pulls you back into music?
So that job very much was like startup culture vibes. And then it kind of got out of that energy and started being like a regular job. It shifted from doing engineering work to doing construction work. Mm-hmm. And the construction side of things was construction. And I was around construction people. And they're not startup people. They're very different. The energy is very different. Mm-hmm. The approaches are very different. Ideology, all of that shit. So like the way things worked in one office didn't work in the second one. And that environment just wasn't fucking great for me either. I wasn't into it. So like they had a big layoff and I was laid off and I was like, I don't want to go back into this work. You know what I mean? I want to pursue my own thing. I kind of want to like work my own job, my job for me type of shit. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to shoot videos for anybody else. I'm not about to go work another engineering job for another firm. I'm just going to work for Chris and see how that goes. So I was making music pretty profusely at that time. It's like some shit I do when like life is challenging. I'll create stuff. It's kind of like an outlet or whatever.
Yeah.
So like, because I was doing that in that time frame, I had a little bit of traction and I just took that and fell into it, man.
Wow. So that we talking like Kanye 5 beats a day for 3 summers. Like we talking like every single day just getting up and getting into it.
I will work at all the day. You know what I mean? You know how it is. It's Atlanta, right? So you wake up, you drive an hour and a half to get to work, even though it's only 15 miles type of shit. Yeah. Work all day and then drive an hour and a half back because it's, you know what I mean? Traffic. Yeah. And I would sit at my desk and just make records for probably anywhere between like 2 and 4 hours a night after that. And then, you know, obviously trying to find some time to kick it with the family too. Yeah. But I was just doing that for like a year straight. And then when that layoff came, I was like, I'm not going back. I'm going to do this shit. I got a community. We didn't find that. We started Controllerize around that time. So I was like, we can figure this shit out. We got it. We can do it. So.
Yeah. So then on the, during that time when you start get back into music and you're like making a bunch of beats just every single day, did you have any goals in mind or was it more so like, let me just make this music and see where it takes me?
It's always been that for me. I've always been like, just kind of here for the journey. Early on, I read somewhere, I couldn't tell you where, I'd be lying if I tried to quote, but about process and goal orientation. And essentially, the breakdown was like, if you're goal oriented, you're in a perpetual state of failure because you're always looking to achieve a goal. And the second you achieve it, you have to go achieve another one. So like you get glimpses and tiny little bites of success and they have to hold you over until you can get the next one. Then you're always hungry, if you will. Mm-hmm. But when you're process oriented, the work is the goal. And as long as you're working, you're winning. So you're in this perpetual state of success, especially when you love your work because you never stop. So like things happen, positive things, but they're byproducts of the work. You know what I mean? And the work is actually the goal. That's the gift, is the work, you know? So you just do everything you can to be able to continue to do the work. And in my situation, the work is creating music, but that work can be anything. That could be working on your community or lifting weights or whatever, you know? But for me, it's making records.
Wow, man, that puts a lot of stuff in perspective for me. And I appreciate you saying that because I know sometimes I get caught up in that goal-oriented type of thinking. And kind of like you said before, like when you accomplished going on that world tour with Jeezy and then being like, well, this really isn't my dream. And like you're doing like great things, but then you're like, okay, well, this isn't my dream. I need to go do something else, you know? And for me, like coming up, I was always oriented, like, you know, when it came to like photography or like videos, I was like, okay, I gotta do a cover for this artist or I gotta get in this magazine. And once I did it, I'm like, okay, cool, whatever, next thing. And you're always looking for the next thing versus enjoying that journey and that process. Holy shit, that's crazy, man. You a guru over here. You're just putting in that word.
Or nah, man, it ain't me, it's life. My homie, I had a conversation with a friend of mine. I sold a drum kit. It was one of the things, one of the products I made and shit. And I had a crazy launch week. I never made this much money on one of my own things in my life, at least in that amount of time. So I called my guy and I'm like, yo, I'm not going to hold you. I'm kind of fucked up. I just did X amount of dollars this week. Yeah. It wasn't crazy. It was like 15 grand, which is still my highest grossing week doing this shit.
Yeah.
But I'm like, dude, I made $15,000 in a week. What the fuck? Yo, this is crazy. Like, I didn't even know you could do that.
Yeah.
Like, how you gonna make 20 though? And I was like, see, that's that shit, bro. Like, that's that shit right there. Like,
no, for real. I get it. That makes, oh my God, that's hilarious. That makes sense. Now, I wanted to ask you, staying on the like producer tip here, where like, did you originally start when it came to production and you changed your name to Stolen Drums? How did that come about? How'd you come up with that name?
It was a documentary series I wanted to shoot on producers, and I wanted to go like hang out with producers while they made beats and talk to them about the process and shit. And it was going to be Stolen Drums was going to be the name of the documentary series. That didn't pan out. So it was my photography name for a while, which was kind of nonsensical, right? Because that has nothing to do with like photography. But it sounded cool, and I worked with hip hop artists, so it made sense.
Yeah.
And then that I kind of shelved it for a while, and was like Christopher Wilkes out here trying to be professional. And once I started making beats. I was like, oh wow, I have a name that actually works and shit now. So I started using it. Yeah.
Wow, and it just stuck, and it makes sense because like, when I heard it, I was like, damn, that's a dope ass name. Stolen Drums sound like some shit, like, you know, it sound like a producer name, and it just fits perfectly. It's funny because I know when I was doing the photography thing, which to this day, I still every now and then when I do it, I went by Elmatic. That was like everybody knew me as Elmatic. And it's funny because I didn't even have like a creative way I came up with that name. I love Illmatic, Nas's first album, so much. And then I was like, yo, that's a dope ass album. I want to be a dope ass photographer. And then I even, you know, I was kind of like, you know, biting the style where I was like ELL and, you know, the similar shit. But it stuck. And everybody to this day who knew me as a photographer first, they were like, oh, that's Illmatic, man. Illmatic. It just, you know, it stuck in it and it's dope versus like my producer name, EZL. And it's like that was like a whole nother thing, but it made sense and it stuck with me. But it's funny how those names just pop up like that. And just,
yeah, you
just
still Elmatic in my phone book.
Yeah. That probably to everybody. Oh, the only people who know me as EZL are like people who newly meet me. And they're like, oh, okay. Or I'll just say, just call me L for short. Cause even it's funny when even West Side Gun, he knows me as Elmatic. And like he's like, oh, that's Elmatic, even though just L. He's like, no, you Elmatic, bro. That's how I'm gonna remember and know you. And I was like, okay, all right, bro. But that's just crazy. Okay, so then you mentioned earlier, so around the time that you got back into production and you were just heavy in the studio, just making beats every day, that's when you guys start to Controllerize.
Absolutely.
For those who don't know, Controllerize is this event that is like, I guess, would you say like it's giving producers love to come and perform? You know, you have people that you pick to kind of be the performers for the night. And then you'll have DJs here and there in between breaks. And it's like a hangout spot with like anime going on to the side, video games over here, drinks at the bar, food, fashion, art, everything. How did that idea come about? And like, how did it develop to become what it is today?
It's always been community driven. Like, so Cubes, Mike Carr, Black Cubes, he had reached out to me like when I was working real early on, and he was like, man, I got this beat show I want to do in Atlanta, and I think you would be cool to have play there. Mm-hmm. And at that time I was doing a radio show on Facebook Live. I was like, bro, I've been doing this live stream show and it'd be really cool for me to just do something regular outside in general, off the internet, like in real life. So maybe we can work together on this show, because he hadn't started yet.
Okay.
And we met up and hit the coffee shop up and kind of came up with the concept. It was pretty cool. You know how sometimes you know you're in the right direction when things kind of fall into place?
Yeah.
So we met maybe like noon, and by like 8 o'clock that night, had the website and the initial assets and the rough logo and the flyer and the venue, and like all that shit was locked in like in a day. So it was like, oh yeah, we definitely are moving in the right direction, you know? We did the first show, like 100 people came out, but it was just like a beat show.
Yeah.
Straight up and down. Like, we just played beats on SPs and like, you know, we were just nerdy beat dudes listening to records together in the basement, basically. And that was like the inception of that shit. And then we got with Mike Sick, and he had gave us like, he didn't give us, but he introduced us to some friends of his that had a bigger venue that fit kind of what we were doing better. Sincere. I know you know Sincere, right? Yeah, he worked at this pizza spot. So, like, we met him, and then he introduced us to his boss. And then she gave us Monday, or not Monday night. What was the name of that shit? Slice. That was the name of the pizza spot. Yeah. And then once we got in there, and the community came in for a couple of weeks to kind of see what we were doing, then all the influences started playing a role. So I was like, man, we like anime. We should incorporate that. So we incorporated anime. And like, we noticed a couple cats would come in with video games and just post up in the back and play games. And we was like, why don't we make that a part of the thing? Like, incorporate the game. So we did. And then the dancers would come. We should incorporate the dancers. And it's always been like the community saying, we think this is dope. Yeah. And us just finding a way to like let them do that shit, you know, and not be weird about it. And that's kind of been like the ethos the whole time. It's like, you'll just be your honest self, and like it's space for that shit wherever that is. Like, it doesn't really matter what that is. There's no like preconception or no shit like that. You don't have to be cool to be in here. Like, just be yourself. You know what I mean?
Exactly. No, it's so dope, because I do remember y'all in Slice, and I remember being there at like Controller Eyes a few times, being like, damn, man, this feels different, this type of event. Because I know me being like a very introverted dude, I like chilling at the house, working on music or, you know, doing whatever. And sure, I used to be out with like at the concerts and stuff, but after a while you kind of get tired as you get older. You're like, I can't really be out here like that. Like, I'm just chilling. And did you ever expect it to grow to the point to where it is now?
Nah, man. Nah, we always just did that shit cause we loved doing it. And it just kept getting bigger and bigger. You know, yeah, like I never ever would have thought it would have been 1,000+ people coming to that shit regularly. Like, yeah. What the fuck? You know, so I thought it was big at 200. I was like, this is crazy. Like 200 people came, like, you know what I mean? So,
yeah. And then let me ask you. So then like that first show that gets to 1,000 people, what's the thoughts going through your head of like 1,000 people showing up to this event?
It's a lot of fucking people. That's pretty much, we need more security. It's fucking too many people in here, dude. This is ridiculous. Like that's pretty much it. But yeah, I mean, we never had like issues that we needed security for.
Yeah.
It was just like, damn, it's a lot of people, man. And then like it started changing. Like, you know, it went from like some beats, some cartoons and some video games to that, plus like food trucks to that, plus food trucks. And the video game should turn into an arcade, and like now there's two stages, and now there's like this open air market where people sell stuff, and like now it's big enough to where like people care, and I'm like certain folks from the community is starting to pop up and like check in on this and shit, like, what's good, bro? Just want to let you know we see you type shit. I'm like, all right, it's kind of a big deal now. Like,
yeah,
shit we say matters now and shit. Like, it's different. It's really different. It became like a proper business. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's crazy to see something like that kind of evolve into that, because you, like I said, you guys were just doing it because you love doing it, and you were beat nerds coming together just to chill, vibe, have a good time, and play dope beats. And then for it to evolve to actually become almost like its own entity, and then now people are like, all right, they're looking at you different, you know, and it's kind of crazy that happens. And so that's real wild. Now, I want to move on to, for those, whenever, I know Control Eyes will come back soon, whenever it does come back, everybody, if you're in Atlanta, man, y'all should come out to, it's Monday Night Garage, that's where usually it's held, man, and it's like this dope-ass event, man, everybody's chill, like, it's just a real chill environment. If you're into anime, music, dancing, hanging out, drinking some beer, or just anything like that, just kick, almost like a kickback, man, y'all should come here because it's just such a dope event. And I love going there and love that you guys created this community in Atlanta, because it almost feels like before y'all, I don't even know where someone who was into that would have gone to go hang out like that, you know, not to put like no disrespect or nothing, nobody, but I didn't know of anybody. And so
no, I think it was like a combination of shit that served a certain community.
Yeah,
like it's challenging to be like young, black, and artistic, and have a place to go where it's not pretentious and shit. It's not to say that all of young, black, and artistic spaces are fucking pretentious, because there's something that's tight as fuck. Shout out to Peter Street, you know. But like, you know, it was just finding a place to be a fucking geek and not have to be like a certain way. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then be able to see other people like yourself. So. You know, it's just like it's a challenging, like, you just, like, if you want to pass somebody the blunt and talk to them about Pokemon, there's not a whole fucking lot of places you can do that. Like, there's a very niche, and we created a space in which you could do that, and I think that's pretty cool. But it started as that, and it kind of grew into like this, like, you know, community business incubator for young folks that want to get a restaurant or a clothing brand or art. Yeah. Or whatever else it is that they do off the ground, which then turned into like a kind of like mini beat, like dance battle situation for all the dance crews. And it's like this big culture mashup that I think all the underrepresented folks around Atlanta that were kind of running into like the red tape of like being fly or whatever the fuck it is that happens at certain events. They didn't run into that shit there. And they were like, oh, we could turn up here. And it's not awkward, you know, that means I can wear my fucking Sailor Moon outfit if I want to do that. Or that means I can come out here and break dance with my homies, or I can come out here and play my beat culture shit off my SP or whatever. Like, it's all kind of okay. You know what I mean? Nobody's looking at you funny for it, because nobody's trying to be cool. Everybody's just having a good time.
Exactly, man. It's a safe space for that.
And so that's a great way to put that shit, man.
Safe space. And we definitely need more of that. And so now I wanted to go back to the production side one more time, because then now you have your websites, which is stolendrums.com, isn't that?
Absolutely.
So on there, you can find like dope sample packs and drum packs on there that you sell. Because I remember I got pieces, and like, you have, it's so interesting, because I remember I bought the pieces. I was like, let me see what's up with the pieces, drum packs that you just dropped. And it's so interesting, because I was like, man, I ain't never heard no drum loop like this before. Because at first, you got to find it, but like, it's a dope groove that you got going. How did you get into wanting to create, like, I remember buying like your first pack. And I remember, like, was it kind of like you saw other people, or you were like, you know what, I use my own type of sounds, let me put something together to kind of give to the people or sell it? I mean,
combination of things. Like, I was very much primarily sample based as a producer when I started. Mm-hmm. And it's not like I got into trouble because of this shit, but there's some opportunities that passed me by because of it. So, like, mm-hmm. certain record labels or certain like situations, like movie deals and shit like that, fell through, or like even like record situations, they fell through because I had samples. And they was like, oh, we can't do that sample shit, bro. Wow. And I was like, damn, that's crazy. Okay. So I'm going to just learn how to play all this shit that I'm hearing in these samples. And then I think, you know, just being present on social media and all of that kind of landed me a couple good opportunities, and where I met people that made sample packs. So I met Soul Surpluses and folks like that, and Drum Broker. And they were just really cool. And kind of mentored a bit and showed me, not really like showed me A through Z what to do or no shit like mm-hmm. that, but like just gave me enough conversation to where I could kind of see what was happening mm-hmm. and enough access to where I could see what was going on. And I'm like, okay, I mean, you just got to learn how to play the fucking instruments. Like, it can't be that difficult. So it took a little while to learn how to play the motherfuckers. And now I can kind of make the stuff that's in my brain, you know, and put out mm-hmm. in the world. So that's where I'm at now. Like okay. making the samples yeah, that I wish yeah. I had back then, you know, that people can clear. They don't got to worry about that shit no more.
Exactly. And like, I admire that, because like, it's dope. I can't remember who it was. I think it was like Vince Staples. He had tweeted something where he was like, I wonder who's making music now that's going to be sampled in the future. And like, that's like I was like, oh yeah, that is true. Cause like, sure. Like, I know we grew up with like, you know, soul music, if you got it from your parents or friends or whoever. But then after a while you're like, okay, well, cause of course hip hop came from like sampling a lot and taking all that. Now you're like, who's making the new soul music, you know, or the records that are going to be sampled. And, that's why I liked it. Like you were talking about, looking at like dudes like Soul Surplus, looking at them, or the Drum Broker, and all these dope producers who were creating like stuff you could buy that was easily clearable versus getting in trouble by Spotify or whoever, just because you wanted to sample a record and then making it easier. And or Tracklib and stuff like that, where now there's stuff like that around here. But what do you have any like, what's like, do you have a, I know you're more so along for the journey when it comes to making music, but do you have anything that you want to accomplish in this music game before it's all said and done?
I just want to be able to make music. I just want to continue to do that shit until I'm old and have my family straight and, you know, be able to work every day. That's really my biggest goal, if you will. Just want to wake up in the morning, drink my green shake, take my little walk around the block, sit down and make stuff and yeah. let that continue to feed me and my people. I'm good with that.
Mm. Are we ever going to hear some more bars from Stolen Drums, or you kind of gave the mic up?
I got a hook on a new Sky Zoo joint.
Oh, word? Yeah. Oh, yeah, 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 yeah.
And, oh, yeah. I mean, I fuck around. It's fun. I like it. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I'm never going to completely stop doing that shit. It's just not what I do for money.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, I guess technically I don't make beats for money. I kind of monetize everything around making beats so that making beats shit can stay sacred. Mm. But like, but yeah, I guess short answer is like, yeah, you'll continue to hear shit like that for sure.
Oh man, Stolen Drums, Stolen Mic. We about to come in. You ever thought about doing like a masterclass when it comes to like production or anything like that?
I low key kind of have a producer community in where I share like all of the different pieces and parts of the business. At least my business, you know what I mean?
Yes.
And like from tutorials on how to like light and shoot mm-hmm. to like how to process sounds, to how to negotiate situations and build contracts and proposals and all that stuff. It's called Sidechain Society. It's a link on my site. But yeah, every week I send a new video out and explain a different part of the business, you know?
Wow. Yeah. And I just remembered as soon as you were saying it, I was like, oh yeah, that's right. You got Sidechain Society. That makes sense, man. It's so dope, bro. I think that's like a good place to end it. But before we go, do you want to promote, plug your website, your social medias, or anything that you want to plug and push?
Yeah, I mean, just hit stolendrums.com. I think the biggest thing, as far as I'm concerned, that would be dope to do is just look out for anything from Controllerize or Sidechain Society. And then just, you know, fucking be a good human. Life is good. Time is precious. Make somebody smile. Those type exactly. of vibes.
Nah, man, 100%. Like I said, thank you once again, Drums, for being on the podcast. I really appreciate it. For everybody listening, or if you're watching on YouTube, make sure you subscribe at Afternoon Programming. That's on Instagram, TikTok, YouTube. We always have new episodes twice a week, Wednesdays and Saturdays. If you're listening on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, make sure you rate, review, and subscribe, because that really helps push out the podcast to new listeners. And until then, man, we'll catch you on the next episode. Peace.
Peace.